Some 68% of U.S. households, or about 85 million families, own a pet, according to a national survey by insurance and trade groups. That's up 12% from 20 years ago, and communities have had to rise to the occasion. This is especially true for dogs. Households with dogs number about 60 million, tending about 90 million canines, and efforts have grown to see that dogs are humanely treated and that people are protected. We'll get an informed local perspective on animal welfare and control measures next on Media Meet. Hello and welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guests are veterinarian at Bayshore Veterinary Hospital, Dr. Tim Hunt, UPAW's Executive Director, Corey Tussava, and Marquette City Police Canine Officer, John Waldo. Welcome. Dr. Hunt, let's begin, by the way, with some with the organizations and expertise represented here. Dr. Hunt, can you tell us briefly about your practice, about Bayshore Veterinary Hospital, and your general observations on a dog's life these days?
Sure. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Yep. We're a five-doctor practice right now. We treat both dogs, cats, and horses these days. We've been around since 1993, mm-hmm. and we have quite a radius of people that come to our doors with their pets. So what I see these days with a dog's life is pretty good, I find. They will travel a long ways. We'll have clients that come from Houghton all the way over to McMillan or down to Gladstone and Naubenway for that matter, let alone everything locally. So we see quite a radius of people and interested people in trying to take care of their dogs and cats' health. I think over the years, I've been a vet now over 30 years, it's definitely improved. And I think Dr. Google is a hindrance, but also I think it does help.
All right. Corey, can we get some background on the Upper Peninsula Animal Welfare Shelter, its mission, organization, and your place in it?
Yeah, really excited to be here also. UPAWS has actually been around for 40 years. We used to be called the Marquette County Humane Society, and that started in 1975. And really what you see, we used to operate very much like that impound facilities, a place for animals to go to maybe be returned home for safety for the community. It really wasn't until the new millennium, about 2006, that we switched to a no-kill mission. So we're an animal welfare shelter with a no-kill mission. We recently moved into our new location, so we're expanding some of our programs. So that's one of the biggest things. And I am the executive director at the new shelter.
Okay. What's the organization of the shelter? You have a board of directors?
We do. We're not municipally run. So if you go into some urban areas, you'll find that there'll be an animal control agency. It'll fall under the police officers. It'll do anything. So we are just a nonprofit entity, not run by taxes, not run by any millages. So it is run with a board of directors and some very passionate and dedicated volunteers.
Officer Waldo, what are Marquette City Police responsibilities related to canines? And can I get a brief description of your job and how you came to do it?
Well, I've been a police officer for almost 20 years. 9 of those years have been with the city of Marquette. Within the last year and a half, I became one of our canine handlers for our explosives dog, detection dog. One of my other duties prior to becoming the canine officer is that I fill our animal control position as well. So on top of regular patrol and law enforcement duties, most of the animal complaints that come in, I handle those in one way, shape, or form. They typically get referred to me, yes. All the officers that are assigned to work on the road handle animal complaints throughout their shifts as well. But when things need further attention, they come to me.
Okay. I couldn't locate specific records on the number of dogs regionally or locally, but I did find a formula used by the American Veterinary Association for estimating dog populations. Now, you have to think of this in terms of a model drawn from national statistics, but with an estimated 115,000 UP households, this is what I came up with applying the formula, we're looking at some 42,000 dogs in the UP. Do we have a figure for Marquette County, say from registrations or any kind of other data?
I don't have that at hand. No. I'm not sure, but it sounds like that would be accurate with the population, what I found nationally, like what you say, usually follows suit. So there's a lot of dogs in the UP and a lot of cats.
You figure households by 2.6 people, and the number of dogs per household is 0.365. So it's an interesting little calculation.
I think you even it out, because there are some households that have plenty of dogs and some households that have none.
Whatever our totals, the question is often raised over whether there are simply too many dogs. One doesn't have to look far to see animals simply confined or tied up, sometimes neglected. Your observations in terms of what you see from day to day.
Oh, I think the majority of dogs are well taken care of. There's always some outliers that have troubles. Either they get a breed that's not meant for their lifestyle, that's too busy, and that's the most typical thing I'll see that probably ends up at the Humane Society will be a dog that might be too busy for that owner and they are just overwhelmed by it, so they need to find a good home. Luckily, we have a Humane Society locally that can handle that dog and find a worthy home for that pet again.
Sure.
So I made that same mistake when I was younger and got a Dalmatian, and I was in a situation where it was too small and he chewed holes in the wall. And then I moved out to the country and everything was good, so I learned my lesson at the behest of my landlord. So that's how it is. But overall, I think the animal health has been pretty good in Marquette County. We always find cases where we have to do some extra work on them, and luckily we have the Humane Society and the control officer that can bring those cases to us if need be.
Okay. John, your observations.
Like the doctor alluded to, finding the perfect fit for a dog. A lot of people want them in the city of Marquette. Bring in larger breeds or herding breeds or dogs that really need a lot of room and a lot of space to run. They're not suited for their environment, so that's when things start running amok. The dogs start breaking containment, running at large, maybe interacting with other dogs in the community in a negative way. So it's just kind of finding that right balance, and again, thankfully we have UPAWS here that maybe they can bring their dog in and find a better match and get that dog in the right place.
Okay. Corey, your observations. You even get down to body language in your training.
Yeah, we do. And one of the things, you know, when you talk about too many dogs, one of the best ways to fix that is actually to spay or neuter your pet. So that's one of the biggest things that we really advocate for, is that, you know, if you are one family and you can handle one dog, that's great. But if you don't spay or neuter your pet and he gets out, you might have litters and litters. So a lot of that has happened in being able to try to make it manageable. So spaying and neutering of your animal is really important. And as Dr. Tim alluded to, finding the right fit for your animal is very important. A lot of times we'll see somebody who just thought maybe they had a little more time on their hands or any number of reasons why life circumstances have changed they can't do it. So one of the things we like to say is, well, that's where we can step in to help. That's a stressor that we can take off of your life. We want to fit the right home with the right pet. And we find pretty often that people may come in thinking they're dedicated to getting this one dog that we have on the list because they saw the picture and fell in love. We get the opportunity to talk to them because we've gotten to know the animal. We know where the situation that it came from. And they decide, nope, you know, they come to their own conclusions that I am a little too busy for that, but there might be another dog there that they wouldn't have looked at that fits them perfectly. So it's really about really trying to find that great match.
Okay. This has been more of a thing of the past, it seems, but one way of dealing with an inconvenient number of pets and strays is just dispose of them. The Guardian reports, a UK publication, reports that 1.5 million shelter animals, including 670,000 dogs and many more cats, are euthanized each year in the United States. Not likely you pause from what you've told us. What is the policy? How does it work?
So we have a 99% save rate, and that's really where that no-kill mission comes from. Before we were a no-kill mission, and in many other areas that aren't Michigan, because all of the Upper Peninsula has great shelters with this mission as well, it is really identifying the reasons behind. Any healthy or treatable animal, we will try to place in a home. We like to almost call it more like adoption guaranteed. That doesn't mean we're a 100% save rate. There is that 1% of animals that come in that are very medically, you know, in pain, have a low quality of life, a terminal diagnosis, and they come into us, or animals that are a public safety issue. So, but for the most part, we do not. We save as many, and we have animals that come in, I tell people frequently, even if an animal's showing a different body language, even if they nipped, even if they growled, what were the circumstances surrounding that? How do we maybe put them in a home where they won't be surrounded with those circumstances? If they really bossy with their food, we maybe not want to put them with a toddler who's going to put their hands in a food dish.
Right.
So the idea of just disposing animals may still be something that happens on a United States level in different areas, but definitely when you're talking to a no-kill shelter is not something that we do.
Okay. Kids and dogs have always gone together naturally, but having a complex and intelligent animal, under your responsibility is really big, and losing one can be very traumatic on a child. So this is a broad question, but I think it bears asking. What should kids and parents know before taking one in? What's a good route toward becoming a really informed pet owner?
Taking them in for what purpose?
I mean, just taking it in as a pet.
As a pet.
Yeah, well, taking it into your family, so to speak.
Sure. So I see pets as a way that kids can learn an awful lot. Appreciation of animals, appreciation of how to take care of something, and the animals give a lot back to them. Often, you know, licks in the face and everything else, kids dig it. I mean, they just love that attention. And when they give it, they get it back. So to me, they have a real good cause and effect with care and the result from said pet. Mm-hmm. Again, you have to look at what pets you're bringing into the house, per se, that's going to match up with your children. Certain breeds do better than others because they're busy, like we were saying, and so forth. But as a majority, if you have the right parenting there to help guide the child along with the pet, I think pets are an integral part of raising a kid. That's my opinion there.
Okay.
You may differ on that, but I think they're important.
No, and I agree. You know, we, again, really, we have, you know, four people sitting at the table and four completely different personalities, and we have to start understanding that animals are the same way. In particular, dogs, they have things that they like and they have things that they don't like. Luckily, we have the ability to talk to each other. I don't like what you do. Please don't do that. Please don't pinch my cheek, you know. Okay. Dogs don't have the ability to do that. So really what we try to do is talk about identifying when a dog is trying to communicate that they're not comfortable. One of the things we're doing in the new shelter are these kids clubs programs. We work with Takamo Dog Training, and they come in and do a dog safety program. Dog bites can be very difficult for both parties. It's not good for the dog, and it's definitely not good for the child. So how do we teach the parents to have your child ask before you pet a dog? Mm-hmm. If you don't like it when a complete stranger comes up into your face like this, don't do that to a dog, even though that's kind of what we all want to do in our heart. So being able to put those key pieces in place on how to make sure everybody's being responsible, and how to make sure that you're finding that right animal. Because some dogs might be playing, they just might be playing a little too rough. So there's a million different scenarios that come in that we really, the best you can do is talk about what does your home life look like, and maybe we have a good candidate for you.
Okay.
And I agree with Dr. Hunt, too, that having a dog, raising a dog, is a good part of a childhood. It's a good teaching the responsibility, and it's not just so that the child shouldn't have to be the sole responsible person for the dog. The parent has to be the adult there and pick up where the child, because child tend to wander in distractions. So, but part of growing up and learning that circle of life and the realities of life being that, you know, we'll have this pet, this friend, a family member, if you will, that may happen to have four legs and fur, that at some point that dog may become ill or become terminally ill or get to an old age and pass on. And as tough as that can be, that is a part of growing up. And that understanding and being able to deal with those emotions, I think, is well taught with having a dog in your life.
Okay.
And one thing I've seen also, sorry to interrupt, Bill, is I've been here long enough to see generational changes with kids.
Yeah.
Meaning, what I mean is, person comes in with a young child, that child eventually gets old enough to have a kid themselves. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I see it pass along from parent to kid and kid to their child. It makes me feel old these days, but I've actually seen it, and I can see the impact of what we've done trying to help steer that along as what UPAWS has done and said as well. The kids follow the lead with their parents, and it's important.
I'd like to take a moment here to remind our viewers and especially our radio listeners that we're talking about animal welfare and control with veterinarian at Bayshore Veterinary Hospital, Dr. Tim Hunt, UPAWS Executive Director Corey Tussava, and Marquette City Police Canine Officer John Waldo. Laws related to the protection and control of animals go back more than a century. Most today are fairly similar in efforts to ensure that animals are not neglected or abused, that owners are held accountable for the behavior of their animals, and that people are protected from animal violence and animal-related health hazards. Now, Rule 1 in Michigan is that any dog 4 months or older has to have a license. John, how does that serve the public and inform practice in what you do?
Well, it serves the public in that there's a standard of vaccinations that have to be kept up to in order to get that license, the one being the rabies shot. Okay. It's a way to tally the number of dogs in the community. Now, it wouldn't be accurate to say that everybody licenses their dogs because we live in a very rural area that the dogs that live on a farm wouldn't even interact with anybody in the public. So some of those owners may not license their dogs. That doesn't mean that they're neglecting them necessarily.
Yeah.
But most of the dogs, you know, are in the city, they have to be licensed. If we come across them, they're not licensed, they could be cited for that.
Okay. What about collars and that sort of thing? Tags?
Well, collars are important to have some kind of form of identification. So if in the event your dog does stray from your property, we have a way to identify that dog more readily and to call the owner, because our goal is not to be punitive in our response to loose dogs, but to get the dog back to its owner and make sure the community's safe.
Yeah.
So without a collar of any kind, it's harder for us, with a tag, it's harder for us to identify and get them back. And plus the collar just gives us a way to hook our leash to them and get them up to UPAWS if we have to transport them up there awaiting an owner to call.
Okay. Tim, dogs have been associated with Lyme disease research and prevention. Can they pose a public health risk?
From Lyme's disease, no. Lyme's disease has to go through a tick vector.
Right.
So the fact that they haven't isn't a direct threat to you.
They've been using the dogs to estimate.
Correct. Canary in a coal mine is what I call it.
Okay.
So right now we're averaging about 100 Lyme's tests positive per year through a hospital where about 8 years ago I saw zero. Using the same test, nothing's changed. So it's changed, it's morphed, the ticks are here, or the disease has moved into the ticks that are here, so be it. So to me, I think it's important to know for the human side of things that we're seeing this level of dog infestation or problems with Lyme's disease, it's got to be out there on the human side too.
That may be associated with warmer temperatures moving north. What about, so you're recommending that, correct me if I'm wrong, are you recommending that people look their dog over pretty much when they,
if they go for a run? Yeah, what I would do is just keep them on a tick preventative from March until December. So the deer ticks are out well before the snow goes away and they come out, or they stay out, I should say, before even up to Christmas. They just need 35 degrees or warmer and these deer ticks will be active and they can drop on you, the dog, whatever. So to me, the challenge is out there as to how to protect yourself plus your pet.
Okay. Corey, running a facility that sees a lot of strays and hardship cases, you must face some safety challenges. How do you stay on top of it?
We have probably the best team that is out there. Our caregivers and our supervisors are all amazing in understanding the needs and really, and I can kind of keep saying, and identifying those body language, the things, to be able to make sure they are safe. Mm-hmm. And then with our supervisors and when we process adoptions, to make sure they're being safe and being placed into their correct home. So our team, the majority of our team is actually certified through the Michigan Pet Fund Alliance in canine handling. We had them come up to be able to teach us different ways. And part of it is force-free so that the animal, you know, is feeling comfortable, but many times a dog will bite or react because they don't feel safe. So what we try to do is make them feel as safe as possible, identify, we do what's called a safer test for them. It's a behavioral test. We use a fake hand. We try to pull their food dish away. We give them some pinches. We make loud noises. And we really just try to see what stimulates them.
That tests their response.
Yes, that tests their response. Now, I will say this. Some in other areas will use that as a euthanasia decision. Since we don't euthanize, we use that simply as an opportunity to say, how do we put them in a good house? My house is 100% crazy. So if I have a dog and they've behaviorally tested and they know that loud noises and they know that all these things are going on, and I say I want to maybe adopt this dog, and they start telling me that, that's my responsibility as a potential adopter to say, that dog is not going to be happy in my house, and it's going to be causing me some additional stress. So that's where we really look at being able to have those conversations with people who are looking to adopt on what we've seen based on a whole list of factors.
Okay. Let's look at a couple of the things that apply here locally. State law provides that counties and municipalities can create their own rules. Just to suit their own circumstances. Anything remarkable about ordinances pertaining to dogs in Marquette? I've got, how about leash and off-leash rules?
Well, I wouldn't say they're remarkable. We typically try to follow some of the state laws and guidances on that. We don't want to go beyond.
That's generally the way it is.
Yeah, we don't want to go beyond that scope. In the city of Marquette, we do have an off-leash area that is the tourist park campground. In the winter months,
just
it becomes an off-leash area.
Right.
You have to go to the city of Marquette and get an actual permit, if you will. That way we can control the number of people that are in and out of there, and we know that the responsible pet owners are going to come there and get that permit. The beaches and stuff, the dogs are not allowed. The way our ordinance reads is it would declare a bathing beach off-limits to dogs. And how we kind of determine what's a bathing beach is that if it's a marked swim area with a lifeguard, even if it's a lifeguard stand, there may not be a lifeguard there on duty at the time.
Right.
But that's considered a bathing beach. And unless it's signed otherwise, dogs are prohibited from being there. And that same is with beach areas that are not what you wouldn't consider a bathing beach, that are not guarded. There's not a barricaded off swim area or a buoyed swim area, if you will. There are a few places in the city that have a sign that says no dogs in that circumstance, but for the most part, an un-lifeguarded and undesignated swimming area beach would be an area where dogs are allowed to enjoy the beach just like the rest of us would.
What about parks?
The parks, they have to be on leash, and the same with the beaches. They still have to be on a leash. That is a state law. We do have an ordinance. When we enforce it at the ordinance level, not the state law level. That's a lesser of an offense, if you will. Presque Isle Park is the only park in the city that we don't allow dogs in the park at all. They have to remain in the vehicles. Now, this time of year when it's really hot, that presents some challenges.
Sure.
So it's just because of the wildlife in the area, that is declared a no-dog area.
Okay. A lot of tourists have dogs. Any special concerns there?
Again, leaving them in the vehicles. People don't realize how hot a vehicle can get. There's been a lot of public safety announcements out there. It's been in the news quite a bit, but it still remains to be an issue and it's a daily call for us to get a few calls and throughout the county to get several calls on that.
At the state level, Michigan is one of only a couple of states that prohibits insurers from canceling or denying coverage to owners of special breeds, like pit bulls, I'd be an example. Is that an enlightened view? Are some breeds inherently dangerous?
I don't think they are. I really find a lot of pit bulls being terrific patients. They come through as puppies, they're raised up through the whole chain of kids and adults as young dogs to older dogs. They're pussycats, pit bulls as a rule. Now, it's different if you get an adult in with an unknown history because of what they're used for in other parts of the country. I've seen some scary dogs come up from Chicago where it's not a dog I'd really like to look at. But I would say 99% of the pit bulls that come through our hospital are gentle giants, very nice dogs.
How about you, Corey?
Yeah, I would agree. It's definitely not a breed thing for us. It is about that, how were they raised? It's a training thing. So, you know, we'll often laugh that, you know, this small dog can have the worst manners ever and nobody really cares. Everybody's ready for him. But if you get a bigger dog, if you get a dog with a blockier head and they don't have those same manners, even if it's not intentional on their part, it's just a training issue. People are a little bit more hesitant. So, but yeah, I would echo that it's definitely not a breed thing. It is an individual. Every dog is an individual also.
And the owner's behavior makes a big difference.
Correct,
I've heard, for example, that the best rule of thumb is exercise, discipline, and affection. Is
sure.
That,
yep. Yeah.
And that's more it? Exercise.
And more exercise.
More exercise.
We say that because we tell people that's why we walk our dog so often at the shelter. Everything else, a well-exercised dog, both physically and mentally, will be a good dog. If you can't give them what they need, they might get a little mischievous.
Okay. The increase in dogs and animal welfare awareness points to a growing pet culture now, and we're certainly in it. The U.S. pet industry is worth nearly $70 billion, and that reflects ordinary expenses, I'm sure there are more for some people, of about $1,300 per dog. Is this translating to better treatment and community support for dogs, as you see it?
Yeah, I think so. We will all laugh, especially if you are in the animal advocate field, about the fact that our dogs probably have more toys than we do. I think it's a different way that we are looking, and I think I've said this before. You know, I had my first pet 20 years ago, my first dog. I am a vastly better pet owner now than I was 20 years ago. I was good then. But now when you go into a PetSmart, you go into a shelter, you go somewhere else and you see something you think your dog is going to like, I think we definitely, making sure we're getting their veterinary care that they need, but also making sure they're spoiled a little bit too.
Okay. We're running out of time here. I'd like your opinions on this. The concept of animal welfare continues to grow. Is there a key issue we should be addressing that would yield further improvements, do you think?
In general, do you see any one thing that's been jumping out at us?
It's a formula, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's a couple of different things, especially with animal welfare. Spaying and neutering is really the best. One of the things that we would come to probably the most, because we can take really good care of the right number of animals, but if we have uncontrolled litters that continue and continue, that's when we go back to, say, maybe the 1800s or the 1900s, when you would have a stray pack of dogs running through the city. Yeah. So it's really more about prevention, you know, and that's so spaying and neutering, good training, good manners, identifying the right thing, putting some of those precursors in place so that it can't get out of control.
Okay. I'm afraid that's all the time we have. We've been talking about animal welfare and control with veterinarian at Bayshore Veterinary Hospital, Dr. Tim Hunt, UPAW's Executive Director, Corey Tussava, and Market City Police K-9 Officer John Waldo. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on Media Meet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.